with 11-year-old Sheldon, Medford High School's valedictorian. You must be so proud.
We're proud of all of our children.
This Thursday.
Once I'm in college, can we push my bedtime to 8:30?
It's a whole new chapter for the Cooper family.
I get it. You're scared that you're going to miss the way that it was. So what do we do? I guess be scared and do it anyway.
Young Sheldon, new Thursday, 8, 7 Central on CBS.
Wine and friends are a great blend, said Ernest Hemingway. First Leaf Wine Club couldn't agree more. Be prepared for the holidays with friends and have wine delivered directly to your door. After learning your preferences, you'll receive 6 customized wines for only $29.95 plus free shipping. Subscriptions are flexible and extremely affordable for entertaining, drop-in guests, and holiday dinners. Let First Leaf Wine Club supply the wine. Visit firstleaf.com. Special offer code GRAPES at checkout.
Joining us on the line right now, Rafael Goyeneche, Metropolitan Crime Commission. They've issued their most recent crime report about the status of the crime stats here in the city of New Orleans. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Hey, my pleasure, Newell. How are you?
First, let me thank you for the hard work that... Yeah, what a game. I mean, it was crazy. Totally enjoyed it. But let's talk about this report. First, let me thank you guys for taking the time to do so. I think this is an important state of the state in evaluating crime stats here, looking at where we are in 2020 over 2019. So let's jump right into it. What did it reveal?
Well, we're seeing, despite the pandemic, people in the city of New Orleans are calling the police department over 33,000 times per month, over 900 times per day. So actually, calls are down about 10% during the pandemic of, you know, versus 19, but arrests are down 50%. And the report is showing a disturbing trend with respect to violent crime, particularly shootings and homicides and carjackings. So those are some of the most serious offenses that affect public safety in any community, and they're spiking in the city of New Orleans in ways that we haven't seen in quite some time.
And obviously, you and I have talked about this a number of times, and we've seen it and I will talk about this later in the show. This defund police movement seems to have not really taken hold and has created a problem. And this is strong evidence of it. I mean, I think we're still paying the ills of the two-year hiatus in hiring that was imposed by Mayor Mitch Landrieu. And we've yet to catch up. And boots on the ground matters. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say we're actually experiencing a defund the police movement right now, and that's from the mayor's furlough policy. So because of the pandemic and the budgetary crisis, she elected to furlough 10% of all employees. That includes the police department. So at a time when the police can't respond to all of the calls for service that they're receiving, and violent crime, particularly homicide, shootings, and carjackings, are spiking, there are going to be fewer police officers to respond to that. And as alarming as the numbers are right now, I'm concerned that the numbers will look even worse as we approach the end of the year, because there'll be fewer officers available to respond to the spiking violent crime problem.
So let's get into the meat of the report. So for the benefit of the listening audience, you know, when we talk about these global numbers, that's one thing. But I think what's even more revealing is when you get into specific crime categories. On page 4 of your report, you talk about violence-related incident calls and arrest trends. What does that reveal for us?
Okay, so during the pandemic, violent calls for service are down 9%. So in 19, there were over 15,000 violent calls for service through the end of October versus 13,800 in 20. So that's a 9% decrease, but arrests for violent offenses have declined by 31%. And so the arrests have, the decline in arrests has exceeded the decline in the calls for service, meaning that in theory, if there are fewer calls for service for violent crimes and the police department is prioritizing violent crime calls, then they should be able to get there and solve more of those, but we're actually seeing just the opposite of that. Arrests are down 31% this year versus last year, despite the fact that the numbers of calls for violent crime are have been reduced during the pandemic.
Rafi, one of the things I was telling on this chart that I saw when it relates to the impact of the pandemic, it's clear, and you point out in January, there was an 8% increase in violence-related incident calls, and in February, there was a 32% increase. But once we got into the pandemic in March, that number dropped to a 21% reduction. So you could see that in January and February. We were on a trend to have some significant increases, right?
Oh, absolutely. And we have had significant increases. Once we get into the part talking about the homicides, you'll see that.
So let's move to the next chart on homicides and homicide arrest trends.
Okay. So this report that we released this morning is available at the Crime Commission's website, metrocrime.org, if anyone wants to look at it. But so what we're seeing in the thing that's significant about this report that's different than some of the other data that's out there, we're actually listing the actual number of homicide victims. So a lot of the information that's available on the city's website just lists the homicide calls, and sometimes when someone calls in a homicide, there's more than one victim. So we're actually reporting the number of homicide victims in 19 versus 2020. And as of the end of October in 19, there were 90 homicides in the city of New Orleans. As of the end of October this year, there are 168, which is an 87% increase. To put that in perspective, in 2019, there were a total of 126 homicides in the year for all of 2019. And we've already exceeded that number by 42 as of the end of October. And over the weekend, the number hit 174. So you've got a spiking homicide problem that is supported by a spiking shooting, aggravated battery, attempt murder shooting problem. And I think that is something that every citizen is impacted by and affects the quality of life and the viability of the city of New Orleans as we try and recover from the pandemic.
Much like this defund the police, as I was going to say earlier, hasn't fared very well across this country. In fact, a number of leading Democrats saying it's probably caused seats to be lost in Congress. I just use that as a backdrop. Where do you see this progressive tendencies of DAs going? In light of this, I know y'all typically drill down to look at the perpetrator, those being arrested, as it relates to their criminal history. What have y'all noticed as to the makeup of the perp in these cases thus far this year?
Well, in the report, we look at the inmate population. So we have a chart where we're tracking the inmate population in the Orleans Parish Jail. So what we've seen is that the number of inmates has been increasing during the pandemic, even though arrests are down. And part of the reason for that is because the courts have been shut down. So the people that are in custody, you can't adjudicate those cases because you can't convene juries and witnesses and so forth and so on. So the inmate population has been going up. But if you look at the composition of the inmate population in custody, you see that 71% of the inmates in custody are in custody for a violent offense or a weapons felony offense. So 44% of those inmates have pending murder, attempt murder, rape, or robbery charges. So those are the most serious offenders that are threatening the community. They remain in custody, and those cases can't be adjudicated because you can't convene juries, you can't get witnesses to come to court right now. So the numbers of offenders in custody are probably going to continue to increase because of the shutdown from the pandemic as it relates to operating the court safely.
So obviously that becomes a huge management problem, especially in light of the fact if we were arresting at rates near national average, we would be putting more pressure on the limited jail space that we have right now, correct?
Exactly. So, I believe that the key to combating the homicides and the shootings in the city is that the police department needs to go back and focus on the violent drug gangs that are operating in the city. So as you will recall, when you were the sheriff and shortly after you left, there were probably about a dozen RICO cases brought in federal and state court and in Jefferson Parish involving violent drug gangs that were terrorizing neighborhoods and driving up the homicide rate. In New Orleans, they created a multi-agency gang task force component that studied the homicides, identified the violent drug gangs, and there were over 100 drug gang members in multiple prosecutions that were arrested, prosecuted, and convicted, and we saw the homicide rate go down. Well, unfortunately, we declared victory, and we disassembled the multi-agency gang task force unit. So with those gangs, when they were removed, it created a vacuum. Now competing gangs have moved into those territories, and they're fueling the violent crime problem. So even during the pandemic, the murder spikes that we experienced and the shooting spikes that we experienced, those weren't random shootings and killings. Those were predatory, premeditated, hunting down rival drug gang members and shooting each other. And sometimes they miss their intended target and hit innocent victims, collateral damage. And if the police aren't arresting those offenders for the shootings and the homicides, that kicks in the retaliatory justice cycle. So that's what's fueling, and in my opinion, is driving the 87% increase in homicides that we've experienced so far this year, and the shooting calls are up 77% in the city of New Orleans.
We got to get to a break, Rafi, and we'll pick up with the shootings and the batteries and so forth. And what's going to happen as this thing increases, and I think you would agree, I was reading an article yesterday about, I think it was a 13-year-old young girl who had a pain in her back and at a playground, and then she realized she was shot. Those are the cases that are going to be the shock to conscience, and I think those are the cases that are going to bring about a situation where folks are going to have to wake up and start holding people accountable for their actions. And we have to look at the quality of the defendant or lack thereof as opposed to the quality of the crime. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us, folks. We're back with Rafael Goyeneche from the Metropolitan Crime Commission, and we're discussing their most recent report. The 2019-2020 calls for service arrests and inmate population trends. So I think we left off with homicides. Let's talk about aggravated batteries, Rafi.
Right. So calls for service. So when someone is shot or someone in the neighborhood hears shots, they dial 911, call the police. So these are just the shooting calls. In 2019, through the end of October, there are a total of 244 calls. Through the end of October in 2020, there were 432, a 77% increase. Just in the month of October, in 19, there were 27 shooting calls for service. In 2020, in the month of October, there were 69 calls for service because of shootings, 156% increase. So we're seeing the shootings that aren't resolved by arrest because these shootings are being fueled by feuding violent drug rival gangs. If they don't solve those arrests, then the rival gangs retaliate. And as you pointed out just before the break, sometimes those shooters don't hit their targets and they hit innocent bystanders. And that, you know, is a byproduct of the police not getting in front of and playing catch up now with a violent crime problem. So a few weeks ago, the chief created a VCAT unit, which is just another name for the multi-agency gang task force unit that we had and disbanded under Mayor Morial, under Mayor Landrieu. So we are recreating a successful tool that we abandoned. And because we abandoned that, I think it set the stage for some of the numbers that we're receiving and seeing right now. And it's going to take a while for that unit to build up the database that they need to be able to identify these gangs and start to arrest and prosecute them.
What is the thinking behind this on-again, off-again approach? I mean, you know, actionable intelligence, criminal intelligence from the street is something that is very dynamic. It's changing all the time. You need to have it. It needs to be in place so that you can give it to the officers to develop whatever the appropriate strategy of the day is going to be, because it changes. And obviously the pandemic has disrupted a number of ordinary trends that have presented additional challenges. That should be a time where you're actually all over criminal intelligence information, in my view.
Well, of course. Of course. And, you know, I think part of the explanation can be viewed in some of the stats that we have on drug-related incident calls and drug-related arrests. So drugs and firearms are really two categories of crime that civilian witnesses don't have to go to court and testify. Those are usually responded to by police, and they observe, make observations and make the arrests. So there's no civilians that have to go to court and testify. So when you're dealing with violent drug gangs, you have that fear factor where eyewitnesses are reluctant to step forward and identify the violent drug member that shot and or killed somebody. But if the police do narcotics enforcement, they can, in many instances, start to arrest some of the violent offenders for drug distribution charges. And because of their criminal histories, a prosecutor can present to the judge compelling reasons as to the risk that that offender poses to the community. And if the police aren't doing that type of enforcement, it means that those offenders are on the streets, and the next time the police encounter them is when there is a shooting or a homicide. And citizens are reluctant to step forward because they see the police driving by the open drug markets on the street, not stopping or making arrests. So they begin to either question whose side the police are on, or they believe that the police department is apathetic. In either case, it undermines the credibility of the police department to be able to effectively serve the people of this community. So drug-related and firearms arrests, calls for service in 19 are up 39%. So during the pandemic, weapons-related calls for service are up 39%. There's been over 3,100 so far through the end of October this year. But arrests related to weapons offenses are down 39%. So those two categories right there are proactive strategies that the police department can employ to drive down the violent crime rate in this community, and you know, that's something that I think we're going to have to address. But several months ago, all of the task force units were disbanded because of some problems with management and leadership, and because of the youth of the officers that were serving in the task force.
Rafi, we've recently seen, in fact, they just passed in Portland, a relaxation or decriminalization of simple possession of all kinds of drugs, to include heroin, cocaine, PCP, meth. I mean, the list just goes on and on. It seems as though we might be at a crossroads, or we are approaching a crossroads of that we in the community may have an ideological risk. Because if we continue to move down this path of simple possession decriminalization, how does that thwart the folks that are willing to distribute these drugs? It seems to me that it makes their market all the more vile.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've spoken to people that have related to me that, you know, we're talking about violent drug gangs, and what is happening is when you have two rivals combating in a neighborhood, they know what each other looks like. So what we're seeing right now is one of the neighborhood rival gangs will reach out to a gang in another part of town and say, look, if you come and take care of one of our rivals, shoot or kill him, you can get in, people don't know you, you won't be noticed, and you can take out one of our rivals, and we'll reciprocate, we'll come into your neighborhood and take out one of your rivals. That's what's happening right now in the city of New Orleans. These aren't the Crips and the Bloods. These are relatively small but very violent neighborhood drug gangs. And you know, if the police are not doing anything about narcotics enforcement, then we're going to see more of the numbers that we're seeing right now. I think it's, unfortunately, it's going to get worse. You know, we had 126 homicides in all of last year. As of Sunday, we're at 174. The question is, how quickly do we break 200 this year? So all of the gains that we've made over the last several years, looks like we're going to give up those gains during the pandemic. And as things return to quote-unquote normal, I look for those numbers to get even more alarming and be more of a problem for this city. And, of course, these problems spill over into the suburban parishes as well. So this is going to be affecting the public safety of citizens throughout the metropolitan area.
One of the, you know, I often talk about the crimes that I oft feared for my community when I was sheriff, for these crimes against persons, and one of those was robbery, because I think robberies can go bad in a second, depending on action, reaction, inaction in some cases. Where do we stand with robbery calls in the city?
Well, so robbery calls this year are down about 18% versus 2019. But robbery arrests are down 35% this year. So fewer calls for the police to respond to, but much fewer arrests. And if you take a look at a subset of the robberies, which are carjackings, those are spiking right now. So in 2019, carjacking calls, there were 65 in through the end of October in 2019. And there are 147 through the end of October in 2020. Just in the month of October, there were 32 calls for service for carjackings versus 3 the previous October. That's a 967% increase in 1 month. So those types of violent offenses, you're absolutely right. It just requires someone to, you know, exert, you know, a little bit more pressure on the trigger of a gun, and a carjacking turns into a homicide.
It was interesting when I looked at the breakdown, too. It's clear that the pandemic has had a significant impact on the occurrence of these types of crimes, because in January, there was a 20% increase, and in February, there was a 107% increase. And then every month thereafterwards, there was a reduction starting in March, directly aligning with the pandemic.
Right, right. So the pandemic, I think, has suppressed some of the robbery charges or some of the robbery opportunities. But the numbers of calls have been climbing really since July. So we're trending up with calls, and arrests are still down. You know, last month, despite the fact that there were 370 calls for service for robberies, there were only 22 robbery arrests. So that's one in every 15 robberies that results in an arrest for the entire year.
All right, we got to get to another break.
A 1 in 15 chance of being caught.
We got to get to a break here. Rafi, we'll be right back with Rafael Goyeneche, head of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, on their most recent report. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. We're back with Rafael Goyeneche, and we're talking about the release of their report on the 2019-2020 calls for service arrest and inmate population trends. Rafi, consider the following. In Louisiana, a felony theft or a misdemeanor theft is stealing anything of less than $1,000 in value. I think you'll be surprised to hear that in California, misdemeanor theft is less than $950 a year. So we're actually more liberal than the state of California. But what they're experiencing there is a reluctance of DAs to prosecute for shoplifting and other what they refer to as minor thefts. And they've actually embraced the defense of some of these shoplifters of complaining of them being profiled. Insurance rates are going up. They're not calling into the police any longer. And in many cases, some of these retail outlets are just crying uncle and they're getting out. This is what I call one of those quality of life issues that just kind of creeps. It creeps into your community and your society. And if you don't keep your eye on it, it will run amok. Your thoughts?
Well, you're right. But, you know, when you're talking about 33,000 calls for service per month, you know, as you pointed out at the beginning of your show, you know, we still haven't recovered from the downsizing that the police department went through under Mitch Landrieu. So the police can't get to 33,000 calls for service a month. So they have to prioritize what they respond to, and their priorities are going to be felony offenses, particularly the first priority is going to be violent felony offenses. The second priority will be property felony offenses. And third priority, obviously, is drugs and weapons felonies. And then when you start to get to misdemeanors, even if you make a misdemeanor arrest, they're cycling out. And what the police department is doing now, because of the realities that if they arrest a misdemeanor offender, they're going to be released almost immediately. So they're issuing summonses. But those offenders have absolutely no fear for the law, and they realize that there'll be little to no sanctions. So they go right back into, you know, the same stores, and, you know, that's creating the problems that you're talking about. I don't have a solution to that. I'm not advocating that those people be arrested and remain in custody when we can't even get to the violent crime offenders. So, I mean, that is, you know, a byproduct of the new world that we're in right now. And, you know, it is an untenable situation for the police, and it's getting more and more problematic. I'm really concerned with, you know, the future and the quality of where we're going to get, you know, the replacements for the officers that every department needs to adequately police their communities around the country. And when you start to factor in New Orleans in all of this, I'm concerned now that you're going to see a decline in the numbers of police officers, because during the Landrieu administration, they gave a significant raise to officers that made officers that were eligible to retire stick around for another 3 years to recompute their pensions. That three-year period has lapsed. So you're going to see more and more officers in New Orleans opt to retire. And then with some of the issues that we're having in the city with furloughs, I'm concerned that more officers in New Orleans are going to leave the city because the pay raise that they got is being dwindled, being reduced, and they don't even know what the financial future looks like right now. So I'm worried that we're not going to have enough police officers to respond to calls for service in general and to be able to address the violent crime problem that we're experiencing in the city of New Orleans right now.
I may have missed the response. I don't know. That's very likely. But I really haven't heard a lot out of Mayor Cantrell nor the city council on this issue. Have you?
No. And, you know, part of our reasoning in releasing this report, you know, it's real easy to say, hey, look, you know, we're hurting financially, so everything we need to cut back everywhere. But if in your personal finances, every person has to make decisions in their homes about what is more important than some other items, discretionary items to buy. So when you're having a financial crisis in your home, you don't cut everything by 10%. You have to prioritize. You need to pay your rent, or you need to pay your house mortgage. You need to keep food on the table. And the discretionary luxury items like cable and, you know, entertainment and eating out, those get cut. But you don't cut your home mortgage payments or your rent payments by 10% because, you know, that will work out for your budget. You have to prioritize what's important to you. So during a hurricane, we're not going to shut down 10% of the pumps. We're not going to send 10% of the pump operators home. So we're in the middle of a crime hurricane, and we can't afford to lay off and furlough 10% of the police, because not only does that compromise public safety, I think it is going to result in more officers looking for greener pastures in other departments that those parishes are prioritizing law enforcement in the manner that New Orleans should be doing as well.
Absolutely. Rafi Goyeneche, Metropolitan Crime Commission, thank you so much. Enjoyed reading your report. Thanks for the great work. And we'll continue to follow up on this because this is going to have a significant economic impact on this city. And all things comes back to the economy for me. And because without it, we cannot sustain ourselves. Thank you so much for spending this hour with us today.
Sure.
All righty, we'll be right back. Stay with us, folks.
We're here with 11-year-old Sheldon, Medford High School's valedictorian. You must be so proud.
We're proud of all of our children.
This Thursday.
Once I'm in college, can we push my bedtime to 8:30?
It's a whole new chapter for the Cooper family.
I get it. You're scared that you're going to miss the way that it was. So what do? I guess be scared and do it anyway.
Young Sheldon, new Thursday, 8, 7 Central on CBS.
CBS, November 16th. It's the season premiere of All Rise. LA's newest Superior Court judge is changing the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor.
We're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
The season premiere of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by the season premiere of Bull. CBS, November 16th.